Thank you for joining me today. My name is Kate McLaughlin. I'm the host of Healthcare Confidential. Thank you for joining us on New Jersey Revolution Radio. Today's episode is about a deadly fungus that has entered the healthcare systems in New Jersey. Unfortunately, many people are not aware of this particular fungus, and for some reasons that are concerning, mostly because the healthcare industry doesn't want you to know about it. There's been 104 confirmed cases and 22 probable cases of this deadly fungus called Candida auris. This infection was first actually found in Japan in 2009 and has literally spread globally. What does that mean for somebody going into a hospital? Because generally speaking, people going to a hospital aren't exactly the healthiest folks, and they're the ones who are most at risk. The first case in New Jersey was found 2 years ago. According to a New Jersey Spotlight article, Nicole Kurgan from the New Jersey Department of Health was quoted by saying that they didn't know whether any of the cases in the state had been fatal or which hospitals had been treating patients with this drug-resistant fungal infection. Currently, hospitals are not required to report if they've had patients with this deadly fungal disease. Dr. Ted Louie, an infectious disease specialist, had told New Jersey Spotlight that many hospitals don't know how to eradicate the fungus once it has occurred. He went on to say that the commonly used disinfectants that are used in hospitals have proven to be ineffective in removing the fungus. People most at risk are patients who have weakened immune systems, so exactly the kind of people that you'd expect to see in a hospital. According to a New York Times report, a case of the infection was found at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago, where a patient was exposed to the infection through an intravenous catheter, which then entered her bloodstream. Northwestern Memorial Hospital did not issue a public announcement stating that they had previously treated patients. And unfortunately, more than one patient had contracted the deadly fungus at that facility. Like I said earlier, the first identified case of this fungus was in 2009. It was found in a woman's ear, and since that time, it has spread globally. There have been over 600 cases of this fungal infection reported around the globe and within the United States. Most of the cases are occurring in New York, New Jersey, and Illinois. According to the CDC, half of those who contract this deadly fungus will die within 90 days. According to the New York Times, Mount Sinai Hospital had a patient that had died from this deadly fungal infection. The room and equipment that was used was still testing positive for spores even after 90 days. Mount Sinai had done what's called a terminal cleaning, where everything is cleaned in the room with disinfectants. But even after that 90-day period, it was still testing positive for these spores that are life-threatening. From the bed to the walls to the IV pumps, the infection was still there. They had to go so far as to actually take out the ceiling tiles and replace them. Candida auris is a fungal infection. Now, Candida is something that's naturally occurring on the skin. It's a yeast infection of sorts. A form of Candida that is very common is athlete's foot. But the specific Candida auris that we're talking about is a multi-drug resistant fungal infection. Now, in some people that are healthy, this infection wouldn't be an actual issue or this organism living on your skin. The problem is this, is when you have an immune system that is not operating at 100%. If you happen to be a patient who's had a transplant and perhaps you're on a medication that reduces your resistance to rejecting your transplant organ, or perhaps you're actively having chemotherapy or have some sort of weakened immune system, this particular pathogen will wreak havoc. The ways that it causes issues are for those when it's entered into the bloodstream. Bloodstream is a great source for something to grow and prosper. Same thing for respiratory. If you get these spores into your lungs, it literally starts repopulating. And since there's no real cure and no way to kill this particular fungus, it puts patients at risk for death. From the literature and from what the World Health Organization has said, with this high mortality rate, more than 60% of all patients are dying from it when they've contracted it. we need to be really confident that our healthcare institutions are providing excellent care and containment. So if it's a spore, spores can float around. It can literally go into an HVAC system and be sent from room to room to room. It can, like they had said with Mount Sinai, live on a surface for 90 days. So in a busy hospital setting, and I say this as someone who's been a nurse in hospitals for a long time, sometimes there's a lack of equipment. So if a patient leaves a room, nurses might grab that IV pole that they need with an IV pump, wipe it down quickly with bleach or whatever type of disinfectant they're told they can use, and bring it into another patient's room. Knowing what we know now, that potentially could cause another patient to become infected. The other concern is even walking out of a room. If healthcare providers or visitors are walking into the rooms of these patients and then walking out, how do we know that they're not tracking that particular microbe with them throughout the hospital? According to the CDC, New Jersey has a third most hospitalizations with this resistant infection. Currently, there are no regulations where hospitals would have to report that this infection is prevalent or people have been treated. In some states around the country, legislation is being considered where hospitals would have to regularly disclose information about resistant infections and deaths from those infections to the public. California currently has a bill that passed originally 40-0, but is currently stalled that will require such disclosure. But there are opponents to the bill, chiefly the California Hospital Association. Currently, New Jersey does not have any regulations or pending legislation that will require hospitals to report these type of outbreaks. Dr. Tina Tan, an epidemiologist from the New Jersey Department of Health, told the New York Times in an interview that alerting the public about hospitals where cases of Candida aureus have been reported would not be useful because most people were not at risk for exposure and public disclosure could scare people away from seeking medical care. The question I have as a healthcare provider is, first off, most people are not going to the hospital because they're healthy. They're going to the hospitals because they're sick. So if this drug-resistant fungus, and by fungal infections, any fungal infection is or has a spore. Spores are extremely difficult to treat. And when they're resistant, and by resistance, we're talking about resistant to medications, having no way to combat it. So if a patient were to contract this, and this literally could be on the skin, it could be a respiratory infection or a bloodborne infection. There is such a high chance that the person would die from this that isn't there or shouldn't there be a right to the patient to know that this hospital has been treating these patients? Now, this is not just isolated to hospitals. New Jersey also has had patients who have been in nursing homes, subacute rehab facilities. If we want to contain an infection like this and improve healthcare, we need to have transparency and people should have the option to know where these infections are at. Like I said, these spores are resistant. A spore can live on a surface not just for an hour or two, but literally for days. And taking to heart what the Robert Wood Johnson University Hospital's infectious disease expert had said, currently, they don't even know what disinfectants will kill it. So with that said, it's really important to start asking questions. Ask the hospital, ask the nursing home if it's been present. Technically, they don't have to publicly report it, but to protect yourself, you should be advocating for yourself. So this is a major public health issue. And unfortunately, as we've heard from the Department of Health, this is not something they're interested in making a public alert about. Senator Brown, a Democrat from Ohio, has introduced legislation into the U.S. Senate. Unfortunately, because of the lack of urgency, this particular bill that would essentially require facilities to be transparent has been stalled in the Senate Health Committee. So once again, we have a looming crisis, as he calls it, and we don't seem to have legislators who are willing to put the public's best interest and health as the first priority. The concerns, of course, are highlighted by Dr. Tina Tan, the epidemiologist from New Jersey, who says that disclosure to the public would scare people. Of course it will scare people. It's their health. They're going to hospitals to essentially be cured, not to go to a hospital and be harmed. Hospitals suppressing information that would alert the public to potential deadly outbreaks or deadly viruses or infections within their walls is not uncommon. According to the New York Times, between 2012 and 2014, more than 3 dozen people at a Seattle hospital were infected with a drug-resistant organism that they got from a contaminated medical scope. 18 of them died, but the hospital, Virginia Mason Medical Center, did not disclose the outbreak, saying at the time that it did not see the need to do so. Clearly, healthcare should be about outcomes. But the problem we have in healthcare today is it's not about outcomes. It's not about protecting the patient. It's about revenue. If a hospital were to disclose that they had infected multiple patients with a deadly drug-resistant illness, you could imagine that people wouldn't be going back there for their endoscopies. So there needs to be legislation on a state and federal level to protect patients. Some ways that you can protect yourself if you are a patient in a hospital is by practicing your own surveillance. Every time somebody comes into your room, make sure that before they touch you, they wash their hands. Alcohol-based hand sanitizers, according to the CDC, do not appear to be effective. Ask the doctor, the nurse, the patient care technician taking your blood pressure to wash their hands first. When they're washing their hands, it needs to be for long enough. So if you watch them wash their hands from the time they turn on the water, they should be lathering their hands for the same amount of time it takes for you to sing happy birthday. So you can sing it out loud or you can sing it in your head, but that is the amount of time that they should be lathering their hands and then rinsing it. Of course, drying their hands. You can ask them to put on gloves if they're going to be touching you. That's another barrier to the surface. Additional things that you can do is this. According to the CDC website, there are only a few things that actually do work or they're thinking work to combat this. If, for instance, you're on a regular hospital floor in an emergency room, before they put on a blood pressure cuff that is not one that's a single use, and meaning it's disposable, it comes in a plastic wrap, and it's something that's specifically for you, ask them to wipe it off. Ask them to use the Clorox wipes. And by Clorox, I mean bleach wipes. Currently, according to the EPA website, the level of the cleaner that they're suggesting needs to be a bleach solution or a solution that can also kill something called C. diff. Now, you can also ask, because most hospitals would have this, is you can ask them for your own blood pressure cuff. They have disposable ones that are usually used for patients that are in infectious rooms. So for an infection control measure, that's what they would be using. And what you would want to do is to make sure that that blood pressure cuff stays on your bedside table or somewhere that it can be easily accessible. Stethoscopes. This is another thing. In the hospital, while you are there, every time somebody comes to assess you, ask them to use a bleach wipe to wipe off their stethoscope. The important thing is any time they're utilizing a wipe, it also needs surface time to dry. So it may take 5 to 10 minutes, but this is a way to protect yourself. You can also ask them for a disposable stethoscope for your bedside. Again, this is something that is available in hospitals to patients in infectious control rooms. So you can also ask as a way to ensure your own protection is, I would like disposable equipment used on me. I am concerned about contracting a drug-resistant infection while I'm in the hospital. So these are simple things that you can do. And of course, like I said, the hand washing is probably the number one thing. Ways that you would know that you're infected. Now, this is really the conundrum. This is the thing that physicians and practitioners are struggling with around the country and in New Jersey as well. There's no real sign or symptoms. Generally speaking, people who contract this. So let's say you're in the hospital, you're in getting some sort of IV therapy. You may not see signs or symptoms. Usually there'd be a worsening condition, maybe fevers, a sepsis response, the blood pressure's dropping, the white counts in your blood cells is going up. Those might be subtle things. Pneumonia's developing, that's another thing. But as far as physicians knowing specifically to look for this, this is where it's lacking. The reason being is because it hasn't been overly common. The concern is this, though, is what if somebody does happen to have it? What if they're in a room with somebody else who might have it? Well, then you're at risk for contaminating the other person or you getting it yourself. If you have a roommate, and let's say they're coughing a lot, you can ask to be moved to a private room. Now, there may be a room charge for that, but you can ask. If you, for instance, notice that you're having fevers, you're not feeling well, you're not getting better, you can ask your provider, do you think this could be this Candida aureus? Now, one of the things we know in healthcare is people don't listen to the patients. You have to literally be your own advocate. Asking questions, asking tests that are being done. What tests are you doing on me? A common way for them to find these infections are by looking at basic blood work, but also having to do cultures. Doing cultures of the blood would show if there's a blood infection. And just like a throat swab when you have, as a kid, if you had strep throat, that culture takes a couple of days to grow. But these are the tools that are going to be utilized in order to get a diagnosis. So here's a wrap up. Candida aureus is alive and well and thriving in hospitals and nursing care facilities in New Jersey. What you need to know to protect yourself is that you need to be able to advocate for yourself, advocate for your loved ones. Make sure that when you are a patient in the hospital, that proper infection control procedures are being done. And also, if you happen to be a patient who contracts this, make sure that the people that are visiting you are listening to what the staff says. If they say that your loved ones need to wear booties and they have to wear a gown and a mask, wear it. Too many times hospitals allow visitors to not follow the infection control measures that are put in place for the staff and allow them into rooms without any type of personal protective equipment. Then those people leave the rooms and can be tracking whatever kind of microbes around the hospital. Hospitals are not hotels. They are there for your safety. They are there for your benefit. They are there to be the place where you get better. So it needs to be joint cooperation. We also urge you to reach out to your legislators and ask them to pass a bill in New Jersey and everywhere that will require transparency. So that if you're choosing a hospital, let's say up at Robert Wood Johnson in New Brunswick, which has a major cancer institute, if that hospital is also treating patients that happens to have Candida aureus, that you should be made aware so that you can make that decision for yourself if you're having your cancer treatment there or maybe somewhere else that doesn't have that drug-resistant infection. I'm Kate McLaughlin. Thank you for joining me again on this episode, our first episode of Healthcare Confidential.